First, I want to thank Rabbi Weiss. First, I want to turn on my microphone. I want to thank Rabbi Weiss and the shul for generously opening their doors constantly for the shmooze and for everything else that they do. Yishkayach, and also thank you for the introductory words. When a chassan and kala get married, Chazal instituted specific brachas. And the Gemara Ksuvos lays out exactly the nusach, exactly the wording, exactly the phrases. And we try to give the chassan and kala the ultimate brachas. One of the brachas are Sameach Tesamach Re'em Ahuvim. Joy, joy and joy upon you, friends who are beloved one to the other. Kesamechecha Yitzircha began Eden Mikedem, as a Kadosh Baruch Hu made happy Adam and Chava in Gan Eden. And the Meiri on that Gemara explains that this is a specific bracha. You, Chassan and Kala, a bracha to you is that you should share the same joy, the same happiness as did Adam and Chava in Gan Eden. That same extraordinary simcha, that same extraordinary exalted state of happiness that they experienced, may you experience this as well. And that's the bracha. And if you think about that bracha, it's rather difficult to understand. Because I'd like to illustrate for a moment what it was like to be Adam HaRishon. Imagine for a minute that you open your eyes and you see the most beautiful tropical paradise ever imaginable. This is Gan Eden. Adam HaRishon fully formed. Adam HaRishon, a fully mature adult with acute understanding, opens his eyes and sees the most beautiful imaginable Gan, a world that's perfect, a world that has been formed for him, everything arranged, everything been waiting. The Midrash tells us that as a man invites a guest, first you prepare the banquet, and then you lay the table, then after everything is all set, you invite in your guest. That was Gan Eden. Every need, every material need, every spiritual need, Adam HaRishon opened his eyes to see the most glorious, perfect world imaginable. And his role in that world was very distinct and very clear: to grow, to accomplish, to be dovek to the Shekhinah, to reach extraordinary heights. And he was mezuman, perfectly prepared for that. Every animal in existence saw the glory of Adam and literally bowed down. He was the master of the earth. He was the reason for creation. He was the owner of the earth. And he had such extraordinary power, understanding, wisdom, and a sense of happiness and joy. He understood why he was there, and he understood the extraordinary growth that he could accomplish. And he looked around and he noticed one thing imperfect. Zel u'mazeh, Kadosh Baruch Hu created everything in balance. Everything has a mate, but I don't. And when he raised that point, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you're right. And then Hashem handcrafted the most perfect chava, the most perfect mate for him. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu walked them down the aisle into the chuppah. And it's hard to imagine the utter completeness of that moment. The joy, the happiness, knowing that you are the future of humanity, knowing that every action that you do changes the very world in which you live, a sense of completion, a sense of happiness. You are literally in Gan Eden. So here's the question. How could we possibly wish a chassan and kala in our world that joy, that happiness? There's a concept called a tefillah shav. You're not allowed to daven an empty tefillah. You're not allowed to say to Hashem, Hashem, you know, getting stuck in traffic is really annoying. Can I please just have some wings to fly? Please, Hashem, make me 10 feet tall so I could have a much easier time. That's an empty tefillah. A tefillah shav is something you're not allowed to do, the least of which is because it makes a mockery of tefillah. But here's the question. How could we possibly wish this chassan and kala in our day and age the same joy, same satisfaction, same happiness as did Adam and Chava have when they were under the chuppah, they were in Gan Eden and we're not. Life has its moments, and life may have very, very sweet times to it, but at the end of the day, there's a lot of suffering, a lot of pain, a lot of worries, a lot of troubles. This is not Gan Eden. And it doesn't seem plausible that we could wish a chosen and kala to have a lifetime of joy and happiness as did Adam and Chava, when that's not the world we live in now, and that's not what seems to be appropriate. And the question is, what did Chazal mean with this bracha? And to focus on answering this, I'd like to share with you a mashal. And the Chovos of Avos gives a very compelling mashal. He says, imagine you have two boys, about 15 years of age, and they live in the most beautiful palatial manner. Servants at their beck and call, horse riding lessons, every imaginable benefit is provided for them. And one day these two brothers are having a conversation, and one brother turns to his other and he says, you know, our father is so generous. Everything he does for our benefit. Look at the various headmasters and various teachers who come to teach us. Look at all the programs. Look at every expense that our father spends. Nothing is too great. The love, compassion, and generosity that he shows is astonishing. His brother looks back at him and says, I don't know about that old geezer. All this getting up at 6:30 and running and training and studying all day. I think he's into his own honor. If we get smart, he's going to look good. I think he's doing it for himself. What is the difference between the two brothers? The Chovos of Avos explained to us, one is adopted. You see, the adopted brother knows what it means not to have. He knows what it means to suffer. He knows what it's like to sleep in the streets and be frigid, freezing at night. And when he was taken into this house by this magnanimous, generous person, he has an unending sense of appreciation because he recognizes the good that is bestowed upon him. His other brother, who was born into the lap of luxury, his other brother who had this from the moment he opened his eyes as an infant, doesn't even see the good. It's not that he doesn't appreciate it. He doesn't even recognize it. It doesn't even hit him. And the two brothers live in the same exact physical setting, with vastly different recognitions, and live vastly different lives. I believe that this mashal is very apropos and very nogea to us. We enjoy so many benefits, so many luxuries, so many things that we are literally clueless to, and it's almost like they're not there. Let me give you a mashal. Imagine there was a blind man, but not just a blind man, a man who was sighted till the age of 35, and he suddenly lost his sight, and for the next 10 years he had to create a new life for himself. The same life physically, but now without sight. He learned to do everything that a sighted man did, but now he had to do it in total darkness. And he spent 10 years in that state. At the end of a very long 10-year period, he heard about a new experimental procedure that theoretically could reconnect his optic nerve. It was still not yet proven. It was quite dangerous. He weighed the pros, weighed the cons, realized that if it doesn't succeed, he might even die, but he decided that it's worth it. He sets the appointment, goes into the hospital, they put him under anesthetic, and after a 10-hour long operation, he's slowly starting to come out of it, and slowly starting to regain his consciousness, and he braces himself for that moment. He grips his fists and he's ready to open his eyes and know whether for the rest of his life he will see or spend the rest of his night life in utter darkness. He clenches his fists and nothing happens. Nurse, nurse, nurse! He starts screaming out. The nurse comes running, what's the matter, what's the matter? I can't open my eyes. It's okay. It takes 3 days for the sutures to heal, relax, take it easy. And he waits those 3 days like an eternity. And after those long 72 hours, with the doctors at the foot of his bed, nurse on the side, they pull off one bandage, they pull off a second, he opens his eyes and he sees. He sees colors, depth, dimensions. He sees his wife's face, his children's face that he hasn't seen in 10 years. He looks out the window and he sees the sky, he sees a tree, he sees grass. He sees the beauty of this world, and with tears in his eyes, he says, "Doctor, doctor, what could I ever do to pay you back for this great gift you've given me?" Says the Chavos Havavos, we say a bracha every morning. Pokeach Ivrim. Hashem, you give sight to the blinded. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I acknowledge the fact that you created this gift called sight and you gave it to me. It's not a given. I'm not entitled to it. It's something that you gave to me. I open my eyes. I see beauty, color, shades, dimensions. I track. I can follow. This is astonishing. What a bracha. And when I recognize that awesome bracha, I thank Hashem for it. But what if you never even realized that it was a bracha? Of course I see. Of course I have arms with which to hold things and legs with which to walk. Of course I have ears to hear with. Of course I have mobility. That's a given. That's a given. As a matter of fact, I'd be the first person to thank Hashem if Hashem ever gave me anything. But I have nothing. And the problem isn't that we don't appreciate that which Hashem does for us. We don't recognize it. We don't see it. It's not that we enjoy it but feel it's coming to us. We don't even recognize it. We don't even see it. And we don't enjoy it. And one of the things that a thinking person should do during his lifetime is learn to be far more sophisticated than a cow in the field. A cow in the field goes through its motion, chomping its grass, chomping and chomping and chomping. But a human being has das, has wisdom, and a human being has sophistication, and a human being is supposed to be nene from everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created. And when you look around this world and you see magnificent sights, when you see colors, when you see trees, when you see flowers, and you say to yourself, it didn't have to be there. For functionality, it didn't need to be part of the world. The bee is largely colorblind. The bee is attracted to the pollen by the sense of smell. The colors, the beauty, the shapes of the petals are for our benefit. And if you look around the world, you see so much that Hashem invested into making this world beautiful and attractive so that we should be nene, that we should benefit from it. And if you look at food, you see an astonishing amount of detail. This is not the shmooze for it. There are various shmoozim that deal with that specifically. But the next time you bite into an apple and feel the crunch and understand that Hashem designed the cellular walls to be hard because that is a very enjoyable activity. And you bite into a banana and it's mushy, and you bite into an orange and you get the burst of flavor, and taste it. Train your tongue to enjoy. Train your palate to appreciate it. Hashem invested a tremendous amount of care and forethought into making this world beautiful, making the sensations here enjoyable, and Hashem gave us the kalim, the organs, the senses to appreciate it. The only thing that's lacking is us. We're not there. When I chew down my food, I don't even know what it tastes like. And if I do pay attention to the first bite, by the second or the third, I am gone. History. I'm not even there. I couldn't tell you whether I'm eating steak or potatoes or whatever. Try it tonight. After a tinnitus, we're a little bit more sensitive. Pay attention a little bit. Pay attention to the food, the texture, the aromas, the flavors. Feel it go down your palate. Feel it spread across your mouth. Pay attention to it and recognize the extraordinary wisdom, forethought, and care that Hashem put in for our enjoyment. And then ask yourself the following question. Why don't I ever space in? Why don't I enjoy this world? Why is it that I'm just like a robot going through the motions? And why is it that I don't open my eyes in the morning and see a glorious sunrise and say, wow, that's astonishing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, look at this world that you created. I'm filled with joy from the beauty, the magnificence of it. Why is it that we're so deadened? And this question is even more profound when you focus on the extraordinary times that we live in. Never in the course of history has there been so much wealth, luxuries, and material possessions available to the common man. Also, to borrow from a previous shmooze, if you remember ancient history, the king during the Revolutionary War period was King George. King George, if you know the famous portrait, is sitting in Buckingham Palace on his throne. The King of England is sitting on his throne wearing a very bulky robe. On top of the royal robe is a royal fur. On top of the royal fur is another royal pelt. And on top of that pelt is another fur covering. And the big, giant, filled King of England sits on his throne. Do you ever wonder why King George was wearing the heavy robe and the fur and the pelt and the fur on top of that? The reason is quite simple, because in Buckingham Palace in the winter it was freezing. You see, he heated the palace with a fireplace. Radiant heat is very fine for what's in front of it. So maybe if the king was close enough to the fireplace, his front was toasty warm, but the back of the king was cold. So what does the king do? He turns around. Now his back is toasty warm and his front is cold. With the crown jewels, the king of the British Empire could not heat his palace. He walked cold, dank hallways at night that were poorly lit. He crawled into 36 inches of duck feather in the royal bed. You know what it's like to sleep on duck feathers? No chiropractor to put your spine back in order in the morning. He didn't have Sealy Posturepedic. And when the King of England had to get in his horse-drawn carriage, six steeds, no less, white steeds, you know what the wheels were made of? The wheels were made of wood. You know what happens with wood wheels on pothole-filled roads? It goes something like this. The King of England shook every time he got in his royal carriage. And if he had to ride to the Duke of France's wedding for a week straight, he went until his insides wanted to come out. I drive a Camry. That's the ultimate middle-class plain vanilla car. You don't get more plain than a Camry. Little me get into my air-cushioned suspension ride as I float along the highway. And not only that, my car has heat. And not only does it have heat, there's a little dial. My wife likes a little bit hotter than I do. I put it at 72 for her 74. And if it gets a little too chilly, I hit the button. Leather seats that have heating coils inside them, so I should enjoy comfort. I enjoy comforts that the King of England couldn't imagine. And if you don't understand what I'm saying, here's a simple observation. Who commissioned all the great symphonies in history? Bach, Beethoven, Mozart. Who paid the tab? Princes, kings, nobility. Because the common man could never afford either commissioning that or even going to a concert. I sit in my Camry, I hit the button, surround sound, and if I don't like Bach or I don't like Beethoven, I click a button and Miami Boys come on. Or if I don't like that, I click it again and I change tracks. And if I don't like the balance, add a little treble, add a little bass, it'll come out a little balance, it's a little too heavy. I enjoy luxuries that kings of yesteryear could not imagine. And if you look at our lifestyles, if you look at the extraordinary wealth that we have, it's unimaginable. I've heard it said that the average man in Slobodka did not wear a suit on Shabbos to shul. Wore an unmatched pants to an unmatched jacket. And you know why? Really quite simple. In those days, when did you buy a suit? When you got married, you bought a suit. The next suit you bought was when your daughter got married. Well, there are a bunch of years between your getting married and your daughter getting married. So what happens first? The elbows kind of wear out, and then the knees kind of wear out. At a certain point, one of them, either the jacket or the pants, has to be replaced. But no one had the wealth to replace both at the same time. So the average man walked into shul with one sort of jacket, one sort of pants. But the idea of a suit matched was a rarity. Find me a yeshiva guy. A non-unemployed yeshiva guy who doesn't work for a living, who doesn't have racks and racks, blue suit, black suit, whatever's in, fashionable, whatever's in. We have clothing galore. I know of a woman, the Rebbetzin, told us when she grew up, she had two dresses, a Shabbos dress and a weekday dress. Find me a woman today. I have daughters. They don't have two dresses. I heard of a woman who had a three-bedroom apartment. The third bedroom was turned into a walk-in closet with a dry cleaner's rack, you know, goes around. We have such astonishing wealth, so much abundance that it's hard to imagine. And if you don't quite believe me, let me share with you one last observation. Anyone today ever hear of something called a diet? Well, when you get to, certainly if you're a woman, you're almost always on a diet. And a man, you get to a certain age, you're also, you got to watch your weight. Why? Because we have a lot of food to eat. Find a picture of people living in this country 100 years ago, and you'll invariably find them to be rail thin. Every one of them thin as a rail. And you know why? Because the average man could not afford enough food. As a matter of fact, in Europe, it was known that if you were a corpulent individual, you were called a balbusser, a big fat guy. Wow, he must be wealthy. Look at those rolls. Wow, he must be really rich, because to have enough money to afford more food than you need to eat was something that was rare. Our biggest problem today is there's so much that we have to stop eating. We have to find ways to diet. We have to find ways to push it away. We live in beautiful homes. We drive luxury vehicles. And by the way, find a picture of Rothschild's house in the 1700s and find me one later, even in the 1800s. And I'd like to share with you, I bet you your house is nicer than Rothschild's. The average home today is luxurious, is astonishingly beautiful. And when you compare our lifestyle to generations before, there is no way to really compare it. And if you don't hear this yet, I'll share with you a religious experience, a heady religious experience. Walk into Walmart. Walk into Walmart and see rows, floor to ceiling, 100 feet long and more, filled with every imaginable good, every imaginable item you could ever think. And by and large, we have enough money to buy it. We lack for nothing. So here's the question. Ask the average person living in our world today, are you rich? 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 I can barely pay my mortgage. I got trouble making tuition, but not rich. And that's a perspective that's rather interesting. If you focus on reality, you see that we enjoy astonishing wealth, luxuries of unimaginable grandeur, right all around us, abundance, plenty. There's so much here. And not a one of us feels rich. Not a one of us says, wow, look at this clothing that I wear. Here's an admission, folks. My white shirts are 45% polyester. Why 45% polyester? Because when I bring them back from the cleaner, when my wife brings back the starch shirts, if they're 100% cotton, get crumpled too quickly. So I prefer 45% polyester, so my white crunchy shirt should look white and starched all day long. Fiddler on the Roof, when he dreamed about if I were a rich man, you know what his dream was? To have a new white shirt every day. Little me wears effectively a new white shirt every day. We hit it. I'm the rich man. I'm the guy Fiddler on the Roof dreamt about. He couldn't even dream about the extraordinary luxuries that I enjoy. So here's the question. Why don't I open my eyes in the morning and say, wow, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you put me into this generation with such abundance and plenty, such wealth. It's all here. Wow. And you see, if you don't recognize it, you might as well not have it, because you're not benefiting from it. You're not enjoying it. It might as well not be there. And what's the answer to this question? Obviously, part of the answer is learning to focus, learning to recognize the good, learning to appreciate it. But I think it cuts a lot deeper than that. I had a conversation a little while ago with a young man. He was beginning the process of becoming a Baal Tshuva, and he asked me the following question. He said, I don't understand it. Why would you have children? Why would you have kids? And make no mistake, he wasn't asking, why would you spend your money? Why wouldn't you want to have a good time and run around free? His question was much deeper than that. Why would you bring kids into this world? It's such an ugly, difficult world. Why would you do it to a child? Because you want to have a kid? And because you want to have a family? Why would you do something so selfish? Why would you bring a kid into this ugly world? Now, this question plagued him. Before he began discovering Judaism, he asked everyone he could get his hands on who had some wisdom this question. He asked his college professors, he asked his parents, and he couldn't find an answer. Why bring a kid into such an ugly world? Now, would you like to know what the answer to that question is? Let me share with you the wrong answer. The wrong answer is, you're right, it's a very difficult world. But that child being born into this world has a chance to grow, has a chance to accomplish, has a chance to be Koneh Olam Haba. Every action that he does is him for eternity. And it's so awesome to be in Olam Haba that it's worth suffering during his lifetime, and therefore it's good for the child. Now that's 100% true, but it's the wrong answer to that question. You see, the answer to that question is that this person's vision, perspective is so skewed, so corrupted, that he doesn't recognize life. And would you like to know what the problem is? You see, if you don't understand life, then life is empty, life is meaningless, life is foolish, and why go through it? If you're not here to grow, if you're not here to accomplish, if you don't recognize the changes that you bring in yourself and the world around you, then life is very ugly. And I agree with the premise, but I'll strengthen the premise. If you believe that life ends in the grave, if you believe that this whole world is vanity, then forget the question, why bring a kid into the world? Why don't you find a bridge and jump? It's a lot easier, a lot less painful. You don't have to suffer. You don't have to go through this whole ugly world. Find a roof, jump off, and end it. And I don't know an answer to that question other than the right answer. And that is, Hashem put us in a world to grow, to accomplish. Every moment is a chance to change myself. Every moment is mine for eternity. I shape myself. I mold myself. But that perspective isn't just an added benefit. That's the reason. And when I understand that, life changes radically. When I understand that, there's a simchas achayim, there's a joy to life, there's a preciousness to a moment. I wake up in the morning and say, let's go. I can accomplish worlds. I can do so much. And that brings a sense of joy, happiness, meaning, fulfillment. And a person understands the world in a very different way. We live in rather strange times, my friends. Tens of millions of cases of clinical depression are regularly reported in this country. The country of wealth, the country of abundance. Gone are the marauders. Gone is the black plague. Gone is the caste system. We're put into a world of ultimate opportunity, education available to all, rights to all men. You can advance, you can create your world, and we live in that world where tens of millions of people are clinically depressed. But here's the observation. Science now tells us that only 16% of those tens of millions of cases of clinical depression have an attributable cause. You see, if a woman was married for 30 years and she loses a spouse, that's an attributable cause. That's a reason for her to be depressed. It makes sense. If you have a predisposition towards depression, if it runs in your family, that's a reason to be depressed. But of the tens of millions of cases, only 16% have such an attributable cause. The other 84% have no attributable cause. No reason, no cause. You should wake up in the morning and say, ugh, life stinks. It's meaning, empty, purposeless, whatever. And when you see people living in this world of luxuries, this world of wealth, this world that's been custom designed for man's benefit, and in this generation where there's such astonishing abundance and plenty, and you see them walking around saying, life stinks, ugh, why would you bring a kid into this ugly world? You're looking at a rather perverse version of the world, and a rather strange, perverse version. I spent this past Shabbos in Ottawa, and I had a chance to meet an old chaver, Rabbi Yehuda Symes. Rabbi Yehuda Symes learned in Yeshiva Chofetz Chaim, spent many years in learning, became a Talmid Chacham, went to Ottawa to become a Rebbe in the day school there. Last summer, he was driving with his family. They were around Syracuse. His wife was driving. There was a deer in the road. She swerved to avoid the deer, and the van flipped over once, twice. They ended up somehow in a ditch, and as she tells the story, Nisim Gluyim, she walked out of the van that had turned over many times untouched. Her children, one after another, came out untouched. One girl needed some stitches in her head, but she said there were 9 Nisim. Herself and her 8 children came out almost untouched. Rabbi Symes did not fare quite so well. He was airlifted from the accident. They didn't think he was going to make it. And today, he's a quadriplegic. Cannot move his legs, cannot move his arms. The most he has is a little bit of mobility in his hand, his head and neck. And I got a chance to speak to him. I gave a shmooze Sunday night. He came. I then went to his house. We spoke for a long time. Shabbos, we spoke some more. And he told me something very interesting. He's a C4, C5. The break is at that part of the spine. And it means they assume, Rahman Zan, it shouldn't be, but that he'll never walk again, never use his arms again. And he couldn't get help to come to his home. He couldn't get trained medical help to help him with his various needs. And he didn't understand it, because unfortunately, there are many quadriplegic in this country, and obviously there's a whole part of the medical profession that focuses on their needs. Yet he couldn't find qualified, trained people to come to his house. And he began asking, and he found the reason. The reason is that almost everyone with a C4, C5 injury has to be hospitalized. But not because of physical limitations, but because there's so much anger and so much depression that they cannot remain in their home. They must be taken to a facility. And he said to me these words, "I have no anger and I have no depression." There was a smile on his face, a simchas achayim, a joy that was infectious. And I sat with him for hours, and it could have gone on for much longer. And I was talking to an old buddy, and we were having a good time. A pervasive happiness, a genuine love of life. And would you like to know why? Because he spent many, many years in yeshiva understanding the purpose of life, and understanding that life is but a state setting. We're given various conditions, various parts to play, but at the end of the day, there's only one issue. How well did you play your part? What did I accomplish? Did I transcend? Did I get crushed by it? And because he spent so many years learning it, Rahman al-Salam, when he was dealt this hand, he deals with it very, very well. My friends, for 30 years, I've been learning that vort. I said shiurim after shiurim on it. I wrote a book about it. I was humbled because I can talk about it, but this man was living it. And when you see a genuine love of life in that condition, you recognize a man who understands life, who understands the purpose of living is to grow, to accomplish, to be dovik, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to sing Shira even in that state, and to change himself and to grow. And I also had a chance to learn Musar. He said to me, "I thank Hashem every day that I could breathe and that I can swallow." Because oftentimes that injury traveling just a little bit further up the spine means you can't breathe on your own and you can't swallow on your own. He says, "I thank Hashem every day that I could breathe on my own and I could swallow on my own." My friends, every single morning of my life, I've woken up and I've been able to breathe on my own. Not once was I not able to swallow. Why didn't I wake up yesterday morning or last week or last year and say, "Kadosh Baruch Hu, thank you. Wow, to breathe on my own. Wow, it's astonishing to swallow. Hashem, thank you." Part of it is not being sensitive, but there's a much bigger part, not understanding life, and not recognizing the value of a moment, not understanding that we're here to grow, and that's the sole purpose in life, and that is the single most enjoyable activity the human being ever engages in. When you fundamentally understand life, there's a simchas achayim, a joy, a happiness that's beyond description. But if you look at life as whatever, I got bills to pay and things to do and whatever, then you're right. Life is pretty rough. Maybe even life stinks. I have a little litmus test. Would you like to know how religious you are? You know, we all measure each other. I keep this chumra, I learn these many blot. Would you like to know how you're doing in this thing called our religion? How frum you are? Ask yourself a simple question. How happy are you? You see, if you're growing, if you're steiging, if you're dovik to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's a simchas achayim, there's a joy, there's a happiness that pervades your inner essence. Oh, you'll have troubles, you'll have worries, other things, but there's an inborn happiness. There's such a joyful life that it pervades the essence of you. And if you're not happy, if you're going through emotions, doing busy and whatever, then it's a very clear indication that there's something fundamentally lacking in your avodas Hashem. And you know why? Because Hashem created us, put us on the planet to grow. And the single most enjoyable activity that a human being will ever engage in is growth, self-improvement. And when you change yourself, when you change Amida, when you recognize Hashem's presence, when you become a different person, that is intoxicating. It's the most enjoyable activity a human being ever engages in. It's what Hashem created us for. And when you do it, there's a sense of harmony, of balance, of inner joy. Would you like to know Pshat in Sameach to Samach? The bracha we give the Chassan and Kala? We give them a bracha, you should understand life. You see, if you get it, if you recognize life, if you value life because you understand what it is, then life is beautiful. You will never attain the joy of Adam and Chava. Theirs was constant. They were put into Gan Eden without worries, without troubles, without issues. You'll never attain that, but there will be moments in your life of supreme joy. If you recognize why we're here, if you grow, if you accomplish, if you understand life, then you will live a life of happiness. Moments of extreme joy, other times of just general happiness, but the climate of your life will be joyful. And that's a bracha we give the Chassan and Kala. You should recognize it. You should understand it. I was in Eretz Yisrael this past winter. And I did the yeshiva and seminary tour. I was peddling the book. And I got a chance to speak in different places. One seminary, I did the Understanding Life Setting Shmooze. Shmooze number 24. The shmooze focuses on exactly this point. Hashem gives each person a setting ideally created for them. Health or the opposite, great wealth or poverty, like an actor put on the stage, this is the life, this is the role you are to play. Okay, in one seminary, after I was finished, did my routine, about 45 minutes, I'm done, I asked for questions, and one girl raised her hand and says, Rabbi, I hear what you're saying. I hear that Hashem gives everyone the perfect life setting, and I understand that intellectually, but I'm in so much pain, how do I deal with that? I was a little taken aback. Okay, I asked the next girl for a question. Rabbi, I hear what you're saying about stage settings, but my life is so difficult, how do I deal with it? I asked the next girl for her question. Out of 60 girls in a room, about 40 had the same question. I hear what you're saying, but my life is so difficult, I'm in so much pain, how do I deal with this? Huh? I didn't know what to answer them. You see, these were all girls coming from regular homes. They were all nicely dressed, intact homes. Somebody's paying the $20,000 seminary bill. They're not exactly sleeping on the streets here. And yet every one of them is in pain. To give you a mushel what it was like, I literally felt that this was 1946, and I was speaking to a room full of survivors. Imagine, Rachman Tzayin, speaking to survivors, listen, we got to rebuild, come on, you have to build a family, you have to put the past behind you, and you have to go on because we have to rebuild the client's role. That's what it was like. But these girls were not coming from that experience. But they were. And it's a very strange thing. It's a very strange thing that we experience in our modern days. There is so much pain, so much unwholesomeness that's abounding in our society. Good kids from good families are fundamentally unhappy, but they're learning and they're growing and they don't get it. And it's rather peculiar. And if you talk to people, and I get a chance to talk to people, and you hear what's going on in their life, each one with a heavy, heavy load, each one with troubles and worries and anxieties that literally can crush the average person. And every one of them living in the lap of luxury, enjoying such wealth, suffering so acutely. My friends, that's exactly the message. As my wife said, we get comfortable here. We get very comfortable. And you even could hear people say, Mashiach, I guess it'd be okay, but do we need Mashiach? I got it pretty good. I got the best yeshivas for my kids to go to. I got a base medrash, I have a shul, I have a rav. Who needs Mashiach? What do I need it for? I'm learning. I'm doing okay. Who needs Mashiach? Now, if you feel that way, there's a lot to say. But let's focus on one single point. Look at the suffering. Look at the unhappiness. Look at the amount of unwholesome people know and understand that there's one cause. It's not that we're materially underprivileged. It's not that we don't have. It's that we're suffering a lack of understanding life, an acute, spaced out generation. The Rambam tells us that the difference between before Mashiach and after Mashiach is almost not noticeable. Olam kiminhago noheg. The world will continue in the way of the world. You still go to work. You still take a seed and plant it in the ground and wait for it to grow. No miraculous changes. No shinui in seder maisa bereishis. The world will continue as the world has continued. However, explains the Rambam, there's one change. And that is molea aretz deyas Hashem. The whole world recognizes Hashem. The whole world sees Hashem right here. And if you can imagine the change and the effect is dramatic. If you can imagine the room is dark and suddenly it shines like the sun at midday. Everyone understands life. Everyone recognizes Hashem. And no one wants to do anything other than what's right and what's proper. And you know why? Because it's obvious. A chet damages me. A mitzvah helps me grow. Steal someone else's money? First of all, Hashem is watching. Secondly, Hashem gives out exactly what a person is supposed to have. But third of all, if I take it, Hashem is going to take it back from me tomorrow. Everyone sees Hashgacha. Everyone sees Hashem. There's no taiva to steal, and no desires of competition. The world changes physically, almost not at all, but everything in the world changes because man's understanding changes. And with that comes a tremendous joy and satisfaction. And because every human being gets it, every human being understands why we're here, and every human being understands the value of a mitzvah. And again, the opposite, the damage of an avera. You could offer me $100, you could offer me $10,000, I would not drink a cup of bleach. I just wouldn't do it. Even if your cash was green and very crispy, I would not drink a cup of bleach because it's insane. And so too, when Mashiach comes, no one will sin. Why? Because it's so obvious. It's so obvious why we're here. And so obvious the effects. It's so obvious the changes that are wrought in me by what I do. And under those circumstances, with that knowledge of Hashem, everything in life changes. And in that moment, there's an extreme joy that overcomes the human. To experience Hashem's presence. To daven, to open your eyes in a blissful world and feel a sense of joy. And with that joy, you look out at the sun and you say it's magnificent. You look out at a flower and you say it's gorgeous. And you look at a glass of orange juice, and as you drink it, you taste it, and you feel the sensation of appreciation and happiness. Because within you, deep within you, is a sense of harmony, a sense of balance, and now your eyes are open to the magnificent world that Hashem created. If you don't understand why we need Mashiach, look at the pain, look at the suffering, look at the depression, look at everything that goes on. Look at the life that we lead. How many people do you know who are genuinely happy? Now we're supposed to be. And that bracha that we give to the Chassan and Kala is that in Golos, in the current times, they should live a life of meaning and purpose. They should understand life, and they should enjoy moments of happiness as did Adam and Chava. And there are a select few who get it. You look at a Rabbi Yehuda Symes, and despite horrible, horrible, his student enjoys life fundamentally and deeply. And you can grow in that, and you should. And you should learn to appreciate the world we live in, and you should learn to have a Simchas Achayim. But you should also understand that we're living in Golos, and that has a very profound dampening effect on our happiness, on our understanding life. When you run around a world that's so out of touch with reality, when you speak to other human beings who walk the planet as you walk, speak the language that you speak, and they're so perverse in their understanding, it changes your understanding. It affects you, and it robs you of your understanding of life, and hence it robs you of your joy and your happiness. You lose focus, and within you there's an emptiness and a vacuum. If you'd like to understand why we need Mashiach, the reason besides everything else is because enough. There's just way, way too much suffering, way, way too much pain, and way too little enjoyment of everything that Hashem created. Hashem put us on this planet to grow and accomplish. We're created for Olam Haba. But Hashem put so many features into this world for us to enjoy. And if you don't focus in on them, you don't see them, you don't recognize it, and you don't appreciate that which Hashem did. Let me close with one last thought. As Rabbi Weiss mentioned, recent events have been rather traumatic. An 8-year-old boy kidnapped, Rahman Slan, killed in a very, mutilated in a very barbaric manner. And I found it very compelling, because it seemed that the whole Klai Yisrael was galvanized by this. In one sense, it was very heartening to hear that 3,000 people stopped what they were doing to volunteer, to go out there and scour the streets of Borough Park. It's something that emergency medical people never heard of. You know, when a guy is kidnapped, Rahman al-San, they activate the community. They get dozens of people, 40 people, 50, thousands of people stopped everything that they were doing to find this little boy. Tehillim, groups gathering. It was beautiful to see the achdus of the Klai Yisrael. And that part was very, very heartening. But there's a certain reality. And when you read about the results and you recognize that these kind of things are not supposed to happen, there is a message there. You see, when you read about a guy who is a serial killer, you're supposed to say that's abnormal. That's not just like regular activities and just he went a little off. That's sick. It's beyond sick. It's so indescribable that it doesn't fit the human condition. But when you read about one of ours doing that, there's a powerful, powerful message. And that message is something isn't right. This isn't normal. This isn't taiva. This isn't kas. This isn't a neighbor getting mad at another neighbor and punching him in the jaw. This is so out of the realm of normal behavior that you have to stop and say this doesn't fit the pattern of human beings. Something's amiss. Something's wrong. And that something is that it's been a very, very long and difficult exile. 2,000 years of pain, of suffering, 2,000 years of living under strange conditions, and to a large extent we've lost our understanding what it means to be the Am HaNivchar. You see, if the tail sinks that low, it speaks volumes about the rest of the body. And when a member of the Klai Yisrael does that kind of thing, it's a horrible, horrible sign. But you'll say to me, he wasn't mentally balanced. And you're right, that's exactly the point. When you see so many people who are not healthy, well, and wholesome, and you see so many people who suffer so many acute mental disabilities, you have to recognize this isn't the way it's supposed to be. This isn't the order of the world. It's not the way Hashem destined it to be. It's not the way it's supposed to be. And this is the end of a very long gullus. In the era of the Ramban, there were many questions that Jews had. And the Ramban himself, as great as the Ramban was, had questions. Hashem, when's it going to end? How bad is the suffering going to be? And when a Jew back then davened for Mashiach, because the blood was pouring in the streets, when you watch your town being chopped to bits, you cry out, enough, enough, Hashem, end it. We don't suffer. We enjoy abundance, material pleasures, luxuries, health, well-being. Everything is ready in our world. But we suffer acutely. And a Jew has to stand Shemoneh Esrei during the 3 weeks, the truth is during the whole year, and cry out to Hashem, enough, 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 enough. It's been way, way too long. Way, way too much suffering. It's not the way it's supposed to be. Hashem is the Meitiv. Hashem created us to enjoy this world. It's not the purpose of creation. We're put in this planet to grow and accomplish, to enjoy being close to Hashem in the world to come. But there are so many features that Hashem put into this world for us to enjoy, and ultimately that's what Hashem wants. And if you'd like to understand what pain HaKadosh Baruch Hu has, and no one understands, when you read about an 8-year-old boy, Rahman al-Flan, who's murdered, and you read about the brutality, no one understands that Hashem's rachamim is 10,000 times the amount you could ever imagine. And when you hear about a woman who's despondent, or you hear about a person who's depressed, and you feel that pain, that's nothing kaviyachol to the pain that HaKadosh Baruch Hu feels. And a Jew has to reach out to his Creator, say the words, Hashem, enough, end this gullus, it's been long enough, let this be the very, very last time. May Hashem grant us that this Tisha B'Av be a very different one. And the Beis HaMikdash is being rebuilt, it'll be the very last time we ever have to talk about these kind of things.